Great news. Just in time for St. Patrick's Day, the Irish people have totally rejected a Christophobic amendment to their constitution. By the way, guess who Ireland's prime minister works for? Speaking of Klaus Schwab, with Tucker Carlson sitting in the audience, the field marshal makes one hilarious gaffe. Plus, Francis the Great Divider strikes again. After 50 years of ecumenical dialogue, the Orthodox have terminated all ecumenical dialogue with the Vatican. And finally, a new RTV movie tells the true story of the original traditional Catholics. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Michael Matt. This is The Remnant Underground. Tonight's show, I want to dedicate it to His Eminence Raymond Cardinal Burke and the novena, I would say the crusade, that His Eminence has called to Our Lady of Guadalupe. Now, the novena started this past week, March 12th. It's going to continue for 9 months until Our Lady's feast day next December, when it will culminate with a ceremony and a mass down at the Shrine in La Crosse, Wisconsin. 100% behind this. And the reason I'm behind it, first of all, because it's the spiritual solution that we've been looking for, but also because it gets to a theme that down here in the Remnant Underground we're talking about all the time. You know, we're engaged in politics. We're doing what we can culturally to fight back, but what we need is spiritual weaponry and leadership, because what we face today is a war against God. You know, and what's desperately needed, again, is a spiritual leader to call us to spiritual arms, to call that crusade, and that's exactly what Cardinal Burke is doing. You know, it was just so fantastic. The day that Cardinal Burke launched this novena, Our Lady of Guadalupe was trending all day long on Twitter. I mean, how cool is that? So let's get behind this, friends. This is something we can all join in on. Click the link below. Enroll your family in this. We've done it. I've done it with my family. And I encourage you to do the same, since obviously the situation is out of control now. We're all running out of time, you know? And Cardinal Burke, thank God, links his novena, this call to novena, to the Sacred Heart of Jesus as well, which is also very important to us. It also reminds me that I'll need you to mark your calendars. Big thing coming up next week. I'm really excited about this. This is this coming Palm Sunday. We will have the premiere of the new Remnant TV feature film on the uprising of the Vendée. And this is all connected with Our Lady of Guadalupe, with the Sacred Heart of Jesus, with the traditional Catholic counter-revolution. Now, this is a thoroughly Catholic movie made by faithful Catholics, and it tells the story of the original traditional Catholics in France. This is a story of 500,000 martyrs down in the Vendée, Western France, who sacrificed everything for altar and throne against now the same nascent, you know, New World Order thing that we all face today. Of course, I've been going down there for a long time, started doing pilgrimages to the Vendée 28, 29 years ago. We're going back there again. This summer, after the Chartres pilgrimage, in order to again reintroduce young people to the story of the Vendée, because I firmly believe that every traditional Catholic needs to know this story, the story of the Vendée, because it is the opening chapter of the book of our story. That's what it is. You know, this is why we wear the Sacre Coeur, because of the Vendeans. They are why the Sacred Heart, the Sacre Coeur, is on our flag, right? That's what they did. We're imitating them. On dedicating ourselves in this war to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And of course, the question is, how does this story end? Because it's not over yet. And that's why I'm so excited about this movie. We don't know how it ends, but we need to know exactly how it began. We teach our children that, tell our children the story of the Vendée, because how it ends remains to be seen. We don't know yet. But I would say that's up to us. Will we keep the faith enough to finish the war that the Catholics of the Vendée started a couple 250 some odd years ago. Now, so be sure to catch the premiere. It's Palm Sunday night, which I think is appropriate given that this is the story of people who laid down their lives Between 500,000 and 1,000,000 of them laid down their lives, suffered, lost everything for the sake of Jesus Christ and his church, right? So I think premiering it on Palm Sunday, watching it with your family is actually a good idea as we go into Holy Week next week. So that's this coming Sunday night, Palm Sunday, right here at Remnant TV, the true story of the rising in the Vendée.
You've got mail.
All right, so Tom from Cleveland wants to know, since you admit that the Fraternity of St. Peter and the Society of Pius X have different strategic approaches and are competitors, how can you say that both of them are right? Aren't they by definition mutually exclusive, and shouldn't one of them be considered in the wrong?
That's a good question, Tom. Is that his name, Tom, right? Tom from Ohio. Okay, thank you, Tom. That's not really a loaded question anymore. It used to be. I would say that it's really important to make a couple of distinctions. The Society of St. Pius X is not Sede of Acontis. The Fraternity of St. Peter is not Sede of Acontis. They're both trying to work within the church to restore the church. Kind of a key thing, and it puts them on the, you know, basically on the same side. They do have strong strategic differences. One side believed it was better to obey and to remain traditional, not to compromise, but to obey rightful authority. The other side thought in 1988 that it was important to consecrate bishops and to defend the faith first, which resulted in an act of disobedience, which the Pope said at the time, well, Archbishop Lefebvre has excommunicated himself.
Nous voulons rester demeurer catholiques. Et c'est pour cela que nous refusons de collaborer à la destruction de l'Église. Nous refusons de collaborer à la perte de la foi, à l'apostasie générale.
Okay, so this has been the big debate over the years. Did he actually excommunicate himself, or was the state of emergency clause in the code of canon law sufficient to cover what he had done? We are not going to figure that out tonight. They've been debating that for 25 years. But what's happened over the years, thanks be to God, is there has been a coming together. Two things went on 25, 30 years ago. All the boobirds said the Society of St. Pius X, in doing this, that Archbishop Lefebvre was setting up the Petite Église, they were starting their own church, and they would soon have their own pope. That never happened. On the other side of the coin, the boobirds said the Fraternity of St. Peter selling out, you can't trust the Vatican, they're going to become by ritual, and they're going to become Novus Ordo sellouts. That never happened. I know from personal experience, I have good friends on both sides of this thing. So what I saw as a layman who's not a theologian, watching all of this unfold, we talked about this last time, a bishop has a Society of St. Pius X chapel in his diocese, some of them in the early days, and the whole idea of Ecclesia Dei was, well, bring in the fraternity to siphon those Catholics back out of the schismatic SSPX and into the mainstream church. Well, I would say, friends, and I'll end on this part of this question to Tom, that completely backfired. I watched it happen. It's happened all over the world, where instead of the plan working, let's use the fraternity to siphon off the SSPX, what happened is the Society of St. Pius X remained the same. The fraternity came in and began to pick up a lot of Novus Ordo Catholics. It's happening all over the country right now, still to this day. So you end up with this massive group, not two groups, but one group of traditional Catholics going to the traditional Latin Mass, homeschooling their friends, becoming friends, or their kids, becoming more or less allies. And I think a lot of the good bishops said, you know, this is crazy. We're not using the fraternity for that reason anymore. Some of them just invited them in, like a Bishop Strickland, because he supported them and he wanted them in his diocese. So you see this kind of beautiful backfiring of the original plan. And my answer to Tom would be, no, it's not up for me to condemn either one of them. These guys are great priests. We should be, I think there's something like 700-800 priests in the society, another 500 in the fraternity. I think what we should do is be on our knees every night praying for all of them, and just don't get involved in the polemical debate that has divided people over the years. They certainly aren't. I think they're getting along a lot better. We have had Society of St. Pius X and Fraternity of St. Peter priests speak at the same CIC, Catholic Identity Conference. Things are a lot better. Pray that you get even better, and I think worry about other things rather than going after that. That would be my short answer. Thank you very much, Tom from Ohio. Now, speaking of good Catholics fighting the good fight, we've got ourselves a new sponsor. Ta-da, ba-da-bum! Our new sponsor is Restore Tradition, a women's conference out in Littleton, Colorado. Now, I was honored, I think, to be one or among the first speakers of their inaugural event 3 years ago. I got to tell you, we had a blast. Those ladies know how to pray and play. We had a really good time, enthusiastic, wonderful, wonderful outfit. So I'm really thrilled that that we're going to team up here tonight a little bit. Now this is their third annual Return to Tradition Women's Conference. It promises to be a great one. My friend John Henry Weston is going to be the keynote. Peter Kwasniewski will be speaking. Registration opens in May, so I would say check out www.restoretradition.com and reserve your seat before they are all gone. And when you get out there, say hello to my good friend Father Nolan of the Return of St. Peter. You're just going to have a great time, and we are thrilled to have this women's conference out in Littleton, Colorado, as a sponsor of tonight's show. And I hope a lot of you will go out there and be at the show in August of 2024. So, speaking of women, this week was the International Women's Day. Did you follow that, Walt?
Oh, yeah.
That was great, wasn't it? Really, really. I know Pope Francis acknowledged it. It was really exciting. I had a good time. A lot of people didn't notice. One person who did was Stephanie Germanotta. Bet you don't know who that is.
No idea.
That is something called Lady Gaga's real name.
Really?
Yeah. She was raised Catholic, baptized Catholic. She's a graduate of the Convent of the Sacred Heart, a private all-girls Roman Catholic school. I don't know much about her other than it seems like she's one of the most vile cultural creatures out there. And here's how this delicate young apostate celebrated International Women's Day in front of her millions of fans.
Lady Gaga is showing her support for Dylan Mulvaney by sharing a photo of them together on social media. Dylan had posted the same picture and greeted everyone a happy International Women's Day on March 8th. Which unfortunately led to a flood of negative comments towards the transgender community. Gaga expressed her dismay at the negative and hateful response she and Dylan Mulvaney received for a post about National Women's Day. She emphasized that labeling such hate as backlash minimizes its impact, as this type of negativity is considered violence.
What if I said that about her people? What if I said that about the liberals? What if I said that about the left? They're violent. They're gonna kill people. Because what violent people do, they beat people up, right? That would be a huge problem. But it's fine when Lady Gaga does it. That's something. We can see what's coming. And of course, once again, it's just, it beggars belief that like Madonna before her, a piece of used jet trash, in my opinion, getting more disgusting and weirder all the time. But like Madonna, Gaga is another Catholic apostate. And you wonder, is that why she was promoted to the stars? Is that why a meteoric or rise to fame and fortune because she was an apostate? Could be. But in any case, her baptized soul now is degraded and she's dragging millions and millions into hell along the way. Some of the cultural casualties, I guess we could call them, seem to be already in hell. You see, the problem is I'm getting old. Walter, is this real?
I mean, who knows nowadays? I mean, I'm hoping not, but
I just want to know, what did the trash can do? What did it do wrong? Oh, man, it's like everything else nowadays. You just don't know how seriously to take any of it. But this looks like some serious messed up kids, you know? It's just unbelievable. So anyway, while that's going on the culture front, whatever that is, the liberated earthlings have exterminated 7 million, in all seriousness, 7 million unborn babies so far just this year. 7 million babies in 2024 have been killed. Now that seems to me, that's a human sacrifice headcount unsurpassed in human history, probably, well, of course, even by the Aztecs before Our Lady of Guadalupe arrived, you know? Certainly nothing like what even the Nazis did. So 7 million in just January, February, not even 3 months. And what's the Pope doing? What is Francis of Rome doing about all this? Well, he's making a laughing stock out of Christianity at the moment. Even the Orthodox now, and get this, even the Orthodox are done with them. I'm Walter Throw. Video up on a screen that's not in English, but what you're looking at here is the Coptic Orthodox Church announcing its suspension of all dialogue with the Catholic Church. This is a March 8th video, very recent, in which spokesman Father Musa Ibrahim announced that his church is suspending theological dialogue with the Catholic Church after its change of position on the issue of homosexuality. The Eastern Orthodox family, he says Father here, has decided to suspend theological dialogue with the Catholic Church since the Orthodox Church rejects, quote, all forms of homosexual relationships. He adds, does Father Ibrahim, that the Coptic Orthodox Church, quote, considers any blessing of such relations to be a blessing of sin and totally unacceptable. I remember when we used to say that as Catholics, and the Catholic Church used to say that. So not only is Francis kicking off a massive rupture in his own church, where he has cardinals and bishops that are turning on him, whole conferences in Africa rejecting his agenda, but now he's blown apart. And I'm torn on this, because the ecumenical movement, I'm not sure what the point of it has been for the past 50 years, but it's ironic that here he comes, the bulldozer man, just blowing apart 50, 60, 70 years of ecumenical dialogue in the Catholic Church. Just blowing them out of the water. The dialogue partners are done with Francis. Francis, the human wrecking ball, is putting personal ideology ahead of the holy word of God. Now, and everybody, including the Orthodox, know it. He is discrediting the Catholic Church. I want to do a show on Francis, but it's just amazing the parallels. The man seems to be discrediting on purpose. He certainly is dismantling the Catholic Church that he supposedly heads up, just exactly in the same way that this idiot Joe Biden is discrediting and dismantling the United States of America.
All Americans deserve the freedom to be safe, and America is safer today than when I took office. Year before I took office, murder rates went up 30%. 30% they went up. The biggest increase in history. It was then. Through no.
Why are these two guys doing this? These two globalists absolutely committed to detonating and destroying their own institutions. Papa Francesco now out there abandoning everybody. Including, by the way, his own children. If you think about this, he's supposed to be the Papa, right? Protecting Christians, protecting his people. Well, he's abandoning them in the face of government persecution now, not seen since the days of the Roman Caesars. I'm talking about the People's Republic of Canada. Right now, the little ferret is up there trying to pass something called the Online Harms Act, Bill C-63, which... incredibly, would create a separate offense for anyone committing what the Trudeau regime deems to be a crime motivated by speech, hate speech, right? And section 320.1001 would subject Canadians to life imprisonment if the little ferret decides you're a hater. Now, at the moment, the only other crime in Canada that merits a sentence of life imprisonment is murder. So if you get mad online and you express serious disagreements, you can go to prison for life in Canada. This is the dystopian nightmare that these maniacs are creating. This is why, like we talked about last week, the Jordan Petersons and the Russell Brands and even the Joe Rogans, so many people are going, what the heck? What's happening? And we're going to talk about that in a minute. They are definitely jumping the shark. But this is what they want to do. And guess who Klaus Schwab's young Glavenslater, the little ferret, guess who he's going to target primarily with this stuff?
Jeff, you're warning about a new Canadian bill, C-367. You've said that this bill could threaten Canadians' public expressions of faith. This is deeply concerning. What can you tell us about this proposal?
And basically, it creates hate speech laws. Some of those have already advanced in Canada. But Christians were protected. They said, well, if they're saying biblical things, or if they're saying things according to their faith, whether that's Quranic or biblical or whatever, they're protected. And this is the alarming thing, is that this strips those out. There is no protection.
Now maybe there's time. God help us. I hope so. This law has not passed yet. But man, I mean, wake up, Canadians. Wake up, Americans. Wake up. You are defending Vatican II still and all. I mean, wake up. Where's the Catholic Church standing up for anybody in any country anymore, other than in Africa? Gone. This is our Auschwitz moment. What's happening in Canada, this is the Auschwitz moment. They're loading up the cattle cars again with this little maniac up there. And it's time for the Canadians to do, time for all of us, but this week, again, touching on a bit of good news, it's time for the Canadians to do what the Irish did last week. And that is stand up and start screaming, quite frankly. Start screaming at what they're doing. I don't know if you've heard about this. Of course not. You probably didn't, because we were mesmerized this week down in the States by the Oscars, which featured a buck naked man presenting on the Oscar stage. Yes, he was buck naked. I'm not going to show you, but that's what happened this week. I mean, if you still care about who won the Oscars, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I could not care any less which one of those pervert, Christ-hating, foul-mouthed people out in Hollywood got to take home a statue this year. In any case, we were distracted by the Oscars, so we didn't see. But over in Ireland, there is some good news. The Irish maybe are beginning to wake up. If they're not, please let me know, friends in Ireland, because I really want to believe this. I know even the Irish bishops finally got off their lower spinal extremities and did a little something on this. This is an example of what was going on here. It's complicated, but I think I'm going to play the two ads that were running, very short ads that were running on TV almost constantly over in Ireland during the run-up to a proposed change to the Irish referendum and a proposed change to the Irish Constitution. Now, keep in mind that the Catholic Church in Catholic Ireland is evidently so incompetent now that the government just got to run these ads with hardly any pushback from the mighty Catholic Church in Ireland. Check it out.
If there is a no vote tomorrow, hundreds of thousands of children will wake up to the news that their family is not recognized by the Constitution. So please vote yes. Because by voting yes, you will be saying that you value women, care, and all families. This is another chance to show the world who we really are.
In Ireland, the state recognises that a woman's life is within the home and works to ensure mothers are not obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties. Here we have a mother doing just that. Look at her there, dutifully tending to all matters domestic.
That was the reality for women. When women got married, they were confined to the home. Our constitution was written in the 1930s by men who were born in the 1800s. We need to remove this outdated, sexist language and reflect the reality of the Ireland we live in today. On March the 8th, vote yes.
But again, according to the openly gay Prime Minister of Ireland, the constitution retains, quote, far too many remnants of Catholic Ireland where women and the definition of marriage are concerned. So, the good news, an overwhelming referendum defeat. The two initiatives were defeated heavily with a whopping 75% of the voters in Ireland rejecting it. Way to go, guys. God bless you all. Still, the fact remains that in Ireland and elsewhere, in Ireland, the gay prime minister, the openly gay prime minister, Leo Varadkar, is waging a war. And who is he waging a war on over in our Ireland? I'm half Irish. Who does this guy think he is? Who's he waging his war on? He's waging the war on God, isn't he? On the Irish people, on the Catholic Church, on the Irish Catholic family, on Irish women, on mothers. How can he do this? Oh, I just can't imagine. I just can't imagine why he's doing this. Whoopsie. Ireland's openly gay prime minister is one of Klaus Schwab's young, glamorous leaders. What a shock. What a surprise. Poor Catholic Ireland. And again, you can't help us. What happened to the church in Ireland? Why did it go? Way to go, Vatican II.
The annual procession of the Eucharist takes place at Bandon with all its impressive religious and military ceremonial. Almost the entire Catholic population is marshaled to join in this public act of homage to the King of Kings.
Springtime of Vatican II is awesome, isn't it? Even Catholic Ireland. Headed up by an openly gay prime minister, legalizing divorce, legalizing abortion, legalizing gay marriage, right? And now basically just trying to shut down all Catholic women in any Christian definition of family, you see? Now, nobody likes to wallow in the bad news, but part of the reason I wanted to share some of this was obviously so we can get behind some of the good initiatives that are happening. For example, Cardinal Burke's initiative, so very, very important. But also to point out the human side. Now, you talk about spiritual side. We talk about the spiritual side a lot. Our priests lead us in a spiritual counter-revolution a lot. But I want to conclude tonight's program by talking about something a little different, and that is the human side. What we as human beings can expect, what we as human beings can do, what a human counter-revolution looks like, and how effective can it be? Because there is good news. The geezers of globalism are really not having a very good 2024 so far, are they? Joe Biden's approval rating hits an all-time low. It's at an all-time low right now, even after shouting through his State of the Union address the other night. And although, again, this Irish Prime Minister guy is still trying to help Biden finance World War III in Ukraine, the neocons are backing down. Last couple weeks ago, we showed you, incredibly, neocon Lindsay backing away from more support to Ukraine.
How would you feel if 7 million people came in illegally into Poland? Would you have this attitude, we got to put Ukraine ahead of Poland? I am not going to put Ukraine, Israel, or anybody else ahead of America.
Just last week, the architect of the 2014 Obama coup in Ukraine, those of you who are still supporting Ukraine because you think you understand what's actually going on there, don't forget, this is all the work of Barack Obama in 2014, the coup that he and John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Victoria Nuland orchestrated. We've gone over this so many times, been going over it for 2 years. You are absolutely backing the Obama administration's plan with vis-a-vis Ukraine. So the chief architect under Obama, Victoria Nuland, she has resigned.
There's still much to celebrate from this news of the end, at least for now, of Victoria Nuland's career in government. She served as Dick Cheney's top advisor for his disastrous invasion and occupation of Iraq. She then served as U.S. ambassador to NATO when the Bush administration, led by Condoleezza Rice and Victoria Nuland, began attempts to expand NATO right up to the Russian border, including Ukraine. And one can draw a direct line between that expansionist mentality in 2007 and 8 and the decade-long war in Ukraine now taking place. She then ran Ukraine for the Obama administrations under Hillary Clinton and John Kerry, where she became one of the most extremist voices in Washington for placing the U.S. on a confrontational, provocative course with Russia. And then when Joe Biden replaced Donald Trump, one of the first things he did was immediately hire her to run Ukraine for his administration.
And now, incredibly, it's Pope Francis's turn. It's his turn to change his tune.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky dismisses Pope Francis's call for peace talks with Russia. In the February interview, Francis said Ukraine should have what he called the courage of the white flag and negotiate an end to the war with Russia.
Well, what do you know? I agree with Francis for the first time in a long time. Russia right now is threatening to reset the reset. And nobody cares about the fourth industrial revolution of Klaus Schwab.
And when I was speaking here 7 years ago, after having written a book about the fourth industrial revolution, I showed how this revolution will change how we live, how we act, how we communicate, how we produce, and how we could
stop the tape, stop the tape, stop the tape. Well, looky there. Aside from Klaus Schwab looking like a bottle of Ban Roll-On, who's sitting in the front row there at the world government meeting? That's Tucker Carlson, isn't it? And he had just given a speech, or he was about to give a speech in which he would deliver his own takedown of the entire globalist agenda at the same meeting. Here he is.
Are you anti-American model?
No. I am the most pro-American. So I'm 54. I was born in 1969. I grew up in a country that had cities like Moscow and Abu Dhabi and Dubai and Singapore and Tokyo. And we no longer have them. And what I have discovered is that's a voluntary choice. London, another one of my favorite cities. You see English girls begging for drugs on the sidewalk. And I thought to myself, if I'm Boris Johnson, who briefly and very badly ran that country, I would ask myself, like, wait a second, my countrymen are begging for drugs on the street. Maybe I should do something about that. But no, he'll show up and give some speech about Ukraine and how we need to send, you know, more cluster bombs to the brave Ukrainians. What are you doing?
But maybe the fact that Tucker Carlson is sitting in the front row is the reason that Klaus Schwab seemed, well, just a little bit nervous during his speech.
But today, we speak about the transition into what I would call the intelligent age. And I did something maybe unusual. I took ChatGPT, and I had a long discussion with ChatGPT, with my pot, if I may say so, to see how this new...
Stop the tape. Stop the tape. Here, we thought that old Klaus was a big, bad, scary Bond villain. It turns out he's just an old pothead. Let's play that one more time.
And I had a long discussion with ChatGPT, with my pot, if I may say so. To see how this new...
Yes, Klaus, you may say so. Please do continue with your pot.
And finally, I had about 20 pages of text, and I asked ChatGPT, summarize the text and tell me now, based on our discussion, how will the new era, the intelligent era, look like? And I read you the text. Envisioning a future propelled by the technologies of the fourth industrial revolution, we see a new dawn of human civilization, one that harmonizes technology with the deepest needs and aspirations of humanity.
Oh, God help us. You're going to just cut. I can't take any more of this decrepit old dinosaur. I really can't. I mean, look at him go. The great and powerful field marshal getting all old and crotchety, like old and crotchety guys do. Obviously afraid of death and consulting his little computerized oracle at Delphi on how he could maybe live forever, you know? Now, here's, and again, I want to close on this. This is what these guys simply do not understand. First of all, nobody cares. We actually like being human, Klaus. We really don't care. You got nothing for us, nothing at all. But I think it's very important on a serious note to acknowledge and to defend against what they're doing from the point of view of humanity. Because what did they do for the 2 years over COVID? You know, what was that all about? The mask and everything. Dehumanizing, right? They completely dehumanized. It's an experimentation in dehumanization. And you know why? I suspect the reason that they're so interested in dehumanizing us is because they fear humanity. Because humanity, like religion, like belief in God, like faith, always is resilient, always comes back, right? So they want to permanently change the humanity, the fuse with the digital identity and all this stuff, right? They're trying to mess that up in all of us, and we got to defend against it. So for example, when we go out for a coffee with a friend, Klaus, we are not trying to randomly just fill our bellies with an arbitrary substance, in this case, coffee. I'm just going to go drink a bunch of coffee. You know what I mean? What we're actually doing by going out to coffee with a friend, we're having a fundamentally human moment. And the human encounter is much more important than the coffee, right? I used to be a bartender years ago. I was a bartender. I worked in a piano bar in Virginia. And I would sometimes actually give my drinks for free to good customers. And yes, I actually saw the manager give me and the piano man, a guy named Dave, would give him a smile on a Saturday night because you know what? He knew it was us. They were coming to see to forget about life for a while. You get it? Now, why not just pump in Muzak to the bar in which I was a bartender? Just Muzak, just have it coming in. Piano Muzak all night long, really good stuff. Why not just do that? Because they weren't coming to hear. The people coming into our bar were not coming in to hear music. They were coming in to have an experience in humanity. They were coming in to see a human being play the piano better than anyone else they'd ever seen play it. They weren't there just to hear piano music. They could have done that at home. You see these crazy airport bars now where there's no waiter, there's no human bartender, you get your little app out, and all of a sudden a beer and a sandwich shows up. Absolutely no human touch. The only place this would work is in these crazy laboratories of the New World Order called the International Airport System, right? Because that's a hellish experience. And think about it. How many things we all do just because we're human. You think anybody goes to a football game, or you think anybody would go to a football game just to sit there and count how many times the pigskin crosses, you know, the stupid plane of the end zone, like a robotic arm, would anybody actually deal? Why not? The football is still crossing into the end zone. That's really exciting. That's the objective of the game, right? Can you imagine anything more ridiculous than robots playing football? Would you go to that game? And why wouldn't you? It's because football is all about the human spirit pushing the human body as far as humanly possible. And that's what amazes us. And that's what's incredible. That's the miracle of life. That's the grand adventure of being human. It's not about equity. In fact, it's just the opposite. It's about inequity sports. Who's the best at this sport? Which players can take this game and take this ball beyond the boring equity of mediocrity, right? That's the whole point. And this is what these globalists, Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates, these nerds, they have no idea what's really going on. And everything they're proposing, Yuval, oh, nothing can be happy, everything automated, robots, everything they're proposing is human free. And that's why it's not going to work. Just imagine a football game or baseball game played by robots, machine efficiency, the same stupid score every single time, score here, score there, right? Every time. It would be a cold day in hell before robotic equity fills stadiums, right? The human part is what makes it interesting and what will always make it interesting. See what I'm getting at? This is how we know, friends, that they're going to fail, even from a human point of view. We can have confidence in this. We are humans. Think about that. We're composed of body and soul and made in the image and likeness of God, Mr. Klaus Schwab. And guess what? We don't want anything from you. We don't want your future. We don't want your technology. We do not want your fusion. None of it. We want none of it. It comes right out of the bowels of hell. In fact, what we want is we want our kids to be able to grow up in a normal world, a human world. That's just like we did. You know, with human imperfections and human inequalities. These idiots don't believe in equality. Are you kidding me? They want to exploit the differences, right? They want to empower themselves by claiming to be paragons of equality, when actually they're just exploiting it. They wouldn't know what to do without inequality. Look at Al Sharpton. What would he do if racism ended? He'd be out of a job, right? There's great money in this compassion. But we want humanity. We want human families again. Human kids, you know, they weren't all perfect, where nothing was fair, nobody was equal, and everybody knew how to laugh at being human, you know? And suicide rates, when I'm a kid, suicide rates, low, insignificant, you didn't even hear about it. Murder, rare. Crime, almost non-existent, right? Drugs, hard to find, not in demand. You see, anti-humans like Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates, they can try all day long to take our humanity away from us, but they will fail. They will fail. No matter how they try to dehumanize us, they will fail because the human spirit was created by God. Just as Hitler failed, Stalin failed, and all these lunatics failed, and Klaus Schwab will fail. Now here he is, Klaus, the field marshal, you know, with his new Nazi promise of a superior humanity. Can you believe we're hearing this again? He is going to use his little computers and his ChatGPT to create an Ubermensch, a Superman. I mean, give me a break, Klaus. We just went through that in the 20th century with lunatics like you. And now, as we're seeing up in Canada, well, if you complain about this stuff, if you don't comply, well, you're going to face imprisonment, you're going to face death, you're going to face execution. Oh, wow, something new. Well, you know what, Klaus? Human beings die, and martyrdom actually proves our point. Martyrdom gives us the last word, because you don't lose in martyrdom, you win. That's how Christianity began, on a cross. But first, before they start killing us, they're evidently going to round us up like they're doing in Canada, threatening to throw everybody in prison again. But you see, we're going to win there too, because humans always find a way to fight, even when they're confined. They fight back with astonishing resiliency. The point is, their Achilles heel, these globalists, maniacal freaks, their Achilles heel is their hatred of humanity. Humanity, because they hate God, they also have to hate what God created. Their hatred of humanity is going to be their undoing. And a prison bars, by the way, can't keep God out. Alexander Solzhenitsyn entered prison an atheist and left prison a Christian. Why? Because he found God in the humanity of the gulag. Darkness of the gulag, he found God. So they'll never be able to stomp out God. They'll never be able to stomp out our humanity. And sooner or later, their satanic hatred of humanity leads all men back to God, because we realize you're looking at the face of Lucifer. Well, there must be a God then. And that's where we're coming to now, friends. And with God's help, we will outlast these godless, warped old zombies USB'd to their computers, the cell phones stuck in their heads, right? And if our humanity doesn't undo them, their agenda, our faith in God certainly will, so we need to hang on to both, you know? Just don't let them take away your soul or take away your humanity. So the lesson, looking at someone like Klaus Schwab, my goodness, how many times have tyrants and maniacs used that kind of language? Now he's just going to do it with technology and it's going to fail just like they did. So the answer for all of us, stay Christian, stay alive, stay human, and God, not them, wins in the end.